I'm Dave Lewis. Much has been made of late in regard to Cincinnati's history as a hub of the American recording industry, beginning in the late 1940s. As I delve deeper into that story, I find increasingly that we share this distinction with the downriver city of Memphis, Tennessee, which similarly moved from the dark realms of custom recording into the light of the top 100. At the center of that activity was Tiny Sun Records of Memphis, operated by Sam Phillips, who was motivated by a love of fringe genres such as hillbilly and blues, and a mission to combat stereotypes of Southerners as ignorant, racist, and chauvinistic. In a comment that may be apocryphal, Phillips is attributed to saying that if he could find a white boy who could sing like a black man, he'd make $1 million. However, when Elvis Presley moved from the regional Sun roster to major label RCA Victor, Sam Phillips settled for $40,000. It didn't make him a millionaire, but it helped Sun Records move into the national spotlight. From that point forward, Sam Phillips was in search of a singer that could measure up to the excitement and enthusiasm shown towards Elvis. And that is the subject of the new book, The Next Elvis, Searching for Stardom at Sun Records, by Barbara Barnes Sims. This is a chronicle of an important period in the early development of rock and roll, to which Sun Records made several key contributions. Sims was employed at Sun for 3 years, beginning in the summer of 1957, as a copy editor and publicist. Elvis had already left the building by this time, but Sims' years at Sun were spent working on behalf of its later stars, Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis, Charlie Rich, Billy Lee Riley, and others. Lest one may think her role at Sun was relatively minor, the staff there was small, and everyone mattered. While Sam Phillips may have discovered Elvis Presley, it was Sims' predecessor, Marion Kiesker, who first heard Elvis as he recorded, at his own expense, a custom disc intended as a gift for his mother, and called him to come back to sing for Sam. Sims admits she didn't have a lot of contact with musicians, and her book mainly deals with the remarkable and eccentric cast of characters who made up the staff at Sun, including Sam Phillips' brother Judd, a handsome and persuasive wheeler-dealer who did much of the footwork in promoting the company outside of Memphis. She also discusses contacts with distributors and promotional people from other labels and the extent to which they would woo someone in the business that might increase the bottom line. On the other hand, she has some choice words about the payola scandal of 1959, during which Sam Phillips testified to Congress that the industry was blameless in this regard. Sims notes ruefully that Estes Kefauver, who headed the Congressional Commission on Payola, was also from her home state of Tennessee. Sims' memories from inside the studio are telling. She provides some insight into the legendary Sun sound and fondly recalls Jack Clements, the engineer and songwriter who played a significant role at Sun. Sims remembers that Jerry Lee Lewis performed so strongly out of the gate that it looked like he might even surpass Elvis Presley in popularity. So much time has gone by since then that hardly anyone today remembers what a scandal it was when word got out that Jerry Lee Lewis had, a little before his divorce from his second wife was final, married his 14-year-old cousin, the daughter of the bass player in his band. However, Sims recalls that this almost brought Sun Records to a halt internally. Other, less shocking things did not go so well for Sun either, such as when Johnny Cash, ever the individualist, secretly changed managers and made his own transition to major label Columbia Records, effectively cutting Sam Phillips out of the deal. Sims also remembers some of the next Elvises who did not fare as well as the King. Most of us have heard of Jerry Lee's cousin Jimmy Swaggart, who did not record at Sun, but few of us have heard of Carl McVoy, another Lewis cousin, whose Sun Records output consisted of one single. Sims' experience as a copywriter has been put to good use here. Her writing is concise, casual, interesting, and the book is a quick read. Sims' memory of these distant times is excellent. She can even recall the outfits she was wearing at certain crucial meetings, and in some cases, such as with Sun House bandleader Bill Justice, she evokes specific patterns of speech and other endearing factors about her subjects. After her time there, Barbara Barnes Sims went into life as an academic and to raising a family. But in terms of her professional career, it is clear that her 3 short years in Sam Phillips' orbit represents her favorite and most cherished memories. The next Elvis, searching for stardom at Sun Records, is not only a wizened and revelatory memoir of the 1950s record business, it is also a frank and positive remembrance of what it was like to be a woman in the business world of her day. For Sims, it was not so bad, but she was always painfully aware of how many men were in the room and just how few there were of her. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Dave Lewis.
Great balls of fire!